This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Sitio Wetlands is the largest natural wetland in the east coast of Peninsular Malaysia, and it is the only wetland in Malaysia with 9 interconnected ecosystems. Think the beach, there's mud flats, lagoons, estuaries, rivers, islands, coastal forests, and a mangrove forest as well. But a local environmental NGO, EcoSweat Initiative, recently raised the alarm about licensed sand mining activities causing damage to the beach area, and also to the Sitio Wetlands State Park, which is located next to the coastal forest. So I'm going to find out more about what's happening over in Terengganu with Dr. Jarina Mohamad Jani. She's a Marine Science and Environment Studies lecturer from University of Malaysia Terengganu, or UMT. Welcome, Dr. Jarina. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me in this program.
Thank you so much for joining me. So a lot happening over in Terengganu. And I think, Dr. Jarina, if you can actually start off by sort of telling us a little bit about Sitio Wetlands. You know, I know it's beautiful. You know, the ecosystem is amazing. Talk to me about why it's so special, what the biodiversity there is like.
Okay, so Sitio Wetlands is very special, not because it is, I do not know whether we can say it's the largest wetlands in the East Coast, but we can say that there is, for example, potentially the largest freshwater lake that actually makes the Sitio Wetlands. So it's actually, and now you mentioned the 9 ecosystem interconnected. Actually, we are trying to challenge that by saying that there's actually 10 interconnected ecosystems. So, but whatever it is, the number of interconnected ecosystems in Sitio Wetlands has always been the reason why it is so unique. For people to go there, it's not huge. Yeah, it's not a very big area, but it is unique because it's actually what we call from reach to reef sort of ecoregion. Because not far, just not even 20 meters away from the coast, you would find the hills, right? It's the Gunung Tebu, Gunung Bintang, that is actually basically makes the central Titiwangsa part of it. And then you have the coast, and then you have the coral reefs, you have the marine park islands just on the right side of you if you're facing north. So that's why it's very unique, and it has, because of the geomorphology of the area, we have so many interconnected ecosystems, different habitats that you can actually see just being there. And what is also interesting about Sitio Wetlands is that because the state park itself is not huge, but then the interconnected ecosystems around it makes it so worth discovering. And especially because I always want to remind people, this is a place that you come, not just to see nature, but especially to enjoy culture. Because this is a place where you come and you realize why nature is so important to people. Because there you see people who are still using natural resources in a sustainable way and to continue living. And from their natural surrounding, they actually have developed a very unique culture as well. The food, you know, the crafts that they make, the livelihood, the techniques that they use to actually look for example, the shrimps or the mud crabs or even fishing. So this is why for us at UMT, because Sitio Wetlands is actually, for us at University of Malaysia Terengganu, is our playground, because that's the place where we learn so much, and we bring our students there to actually learn about nature and culture. So that is why for us it's a shame if the rest of Malaysia or even the rest of the world do not get to see this, because so far everybody who comes to Sitio Wetlands, they will see the connection, and that's so important for us today, because I think most people forget that we are part of nature, and that's why we have to protect it. So in short, that's why Sitio Wetlands for me is, so I've been working there since 2006, and people always, my colleagues, you know, researchers are always asking me, Ja, how can you stay in a place and do research in the same place for so long? For me, because there's so much to do. There's so many, maybe because I like details as well, I don't know. But there is always something fresh. For me, for example, for the discovery of this Tasik Berombak, which is we believe to be now, since what has happened to Chini and Bera, we believe that probably this is the largest freshwater lake in the East Coast now. And it's amazing that this discovery of freshwater, for me, the Tasik Berombak, because I'm actually not from Terengganu. I came to Terengganu in 2006 because I love Terengganu. It's because it was I only found out because, you know, for my work, I'm a human ecologist, actually. I study the relationship between people and nature. So I started, you know, I talked a lot and I talked to people a lot. So I remember in my conversations with the elders, they were telling me about this lake. And I said, what lake? And I was like, there's no lake. He said, yes, there is, because it's behind the oil palm plantation. That's why I never saw it, because there's this huge oil palm plantation that surrounds the lake. And that's why when I finished my PhD, one of the first thing I did was to rally my colleagues to go and do an expedition there. And I am so happy to say that I think that's one of the reasons why that part now is part of the state park as well. It's been gazetted. So Tasik Bromba is now part of the state park. So that's one of the ecosystems that's actually being protected. The other is mostly mangrove. But there's all these other ecosystems that you mentioned, the beach, the coastal forest, you know, the lagoons, the mud flats, even the breeze forest, Paya Gelap, you know, the Meluka swamps. They are all very important to the integrity of this beautiful ecoregion. So come and you'll be convinced. I'm not just telling you fairy tales. Come and you'll find out.
I'm so ashamed to say that I knew nothing about this until very recently, you know. It sounds amazing. And like you said, it's a playground for you almost, because there's just so much, right? Can you just imagine it's teeming with life, teeming with, you know, biodiversity there. And I know that, you know, we all like our little iconic species, right? I know that it's only in situ that one can find things like painted terrapins, for example, river terrapins and green turtles all in the same area, something like that, right?
Yes, and also to remind Malaysians actually that for once upon a time, this was also the only place where you can find abundance of olive ridleys, which is one of the most endangered species of sea turtles. In Malay, we call it penyulipas. Yeah? So even actually in the East Coast, there's hardly any left. Actually, landing is so few, even in situ, to be honest, we've not seen many in the past few years. But that place used to have so many of them that I think back in the 60s, one of the earliest turtle researchers that came to Malaysia, Moll, was actually proposing that area to be part of a, can you imagine, he proposed it to be an olive ridley sanctuary. So if it's a sanctuary, you can imagine the number of olive ridleys that were nesting there. So, and also you mentioned the painted terrapin. Painted terrapin is so rare, and Setu is one of the few places in Malaysia where they actually nest. So, so it's true, and it has all this. I would say that we might not have abundance of biodiversity in the sense that, you know, there are so many other state parks that has higher number of species and whatnot. But remember that this is a coastal ecosystem where it's not, you know, coastal areas are known to be not so nutrient rich, you know, the vegetation is stunted and everything, but there is still a lot of biodiversity despite this kind of this kind of profile. And what we don't have in quantity, I always like to say we have in quality. That is why it's unique. We even have in the sense of flora. For example, a lot of people come to Situ Wetlands because that's where you can find the Bruguera Hennessy, which is actually a hybrid, but it's so rare hybrid that it's very rare to find them even in any mangrove forest. And a lot of researchers from all over the world come here just to have a look at it because it's so rare. And that only happens because Situ Wetlands, the mangrove area is so narrow that I guess the pollinators, which are very important, like the bats and whatnot, they have no choice, but they cannot be, for example, if you go to Matang, maybe they can be exclusive. They can just eat the same kind of mangrove species. And anyway, you know, in Matang, there's mostly plantation. It's almost like a plantation because the mangroves are actually planted for more than 100 years already. So there's a lot of exclusive species. But in still wetlands, because of the dynamic and very differentiated ecosystems, you don't have a swath of, for example, rhizophora, apiculata, for example, but they'll be mix of different. So because of this mixity, we have so many hybrids. Even the Bruguera, the, you know, what we call Malay, the Berembang family, right? We have different types because they have no choice. The pollinators, if they want to survive, they cannot just be picky. They cannot be picky. They cannot just eat one specific species. They have to go to others. And because of that, we have so many hybrid species, which is so interesting for somebody who studies speciation and you know, taxonomy and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, like I said, when you first asked me about Situ Wetlands, I said, I can talk about Situ Wetlands for days. Yeah, so but you come and you would see. And for me, one of the most important thing to highlight also is probably because the City Wetlands State Park that we have now today is actually inspired mostly by the efforts of the local community, because they were the ones in 2006 came together, worked, collaborated with us, and in the end led the mangrove replanting project that we started in an area that was actually it was actually disturbed. The original mangrove that was there was cleared because they had some idea, they had some plans for development, but it never took off. So the communities, knowing nothing about replanting, came together with us, started collecting seeds, started potting them into, and then making makeshift nurseries, and then replanting them, shooing away the cows that were eating the saplings, you know. So, and that actually, after that, the state government was so inspired by the effort of this community that they then started to give infrastructure. And now, if you come to Wetlands and you look at this boardwalk statue, the statue boardwalk is now the one of the most popular must-see stops for tourists in Terengganu. It is so beautiful. If you come, I think some people actually even take like wedding photos there. But I always tell the state park people, always remind people who come there that the trees that you find so beautiful now, those were planted by people. Because we want people to know that human can also be a very positive element in conservation, because we can restore, we can help restore. Of course, because of course we damage a lot, but it also means that we can also help to restore, because we have that capacity, it's in our hands. So for me, it's always inspiring, because you see, if orang kampung can do it, you have no excuse. How I see it.
For sure. And if you can just sort of explain to those who are unfamiliar with wetlands, right? I know they occur in different environments around the world. They all have very divergent characteristics, right? But they have one thing in common. They're really extremely important habitats of rich biodiversity, right? And they have a very important role to play in the lives of humans and animals alike. But maybe you can just, you know, briefly explain why wetlands are so important. You know, why are they such a critical part of our natural environment?
Okay, so wetlands is there's a very big, if you, for example, if people have, you know, really interested in this, they can really, you can just go and Google or go to the Ramsar site and see the different kinds of habitats or landscapes that are considered wetlands. But in general, wetlands mean an area that is inundated for a significant amount of time. It doesn't have to be wet all the time. Doesn't have to be, for example, it doesn't have to be like a lake that is always with water. It can also be areas like swamps that can, or even coral reefs are considered wetlands, because there will be the tide that recedes and will leave it actually exposed and almost relatively dry, but it will come back. So it's the same thing with coastal wetlands, especially like mangroves. I hope everyone listening have at least been to a mangrove once. You would see that when the tide is low, it's almost dry. But yeah, when the tide is high, you can't even see the roots anymore, because it's so, the water is so high. But and what is so sad about all these wetlands is that everybody always consider them as wasteland, because they like, you know, because you know you can't grow trees there, right? Because it's like, for example, mangroves, there's salt water. So, you know, and then, so we can't grow anything because there's salt there. And even in the freshwater swamps, you can't grow because there's water. What can you grow, right? Except for paddy. By the way, paddy fields are also a wetland. Eh? So there's always been this misconception that they are wasteland. They have to be developed. They have to be reclaimed. They have to be, you know, you have to put sand, soil on it so that then it becomes solid structure. You can build stuff and stuff. This is so wrong, because the wetlands is so important, like you said, biodiversity. Why the biodiversity is so rich there is because of its unique nature, that it is not wet all the time. Because, you know, nature is very interesting. The more challenges it faces, the more resilient it is or adaptive it is. So that's where you find, for example, look at the rhizophoras. Why are they such a fascination to botanists or people who study, you know, evolution? It's because this is a tree that can actually breathe underwater and can actually desalinize. That means because it lives by the sea, right? So it has its own root systems that can actually get rid, and even the leaves can get rid of the excess of salt, so that it can still do all the processes it needs to do to photosynthesize. So they are so resilient, and they are so unique, because they are not they did not follow the standard evolution path, because they didn't take the easy way, I would say. So that's why, even though they might not be high in species, but they're so unique. and they're so, and they're so diverse in the sense that because everybody has to find a specialty, right? Yeah. So this is but you have to pay attention, because even the marshes behind your house is potentially a wetland. Not also not just because of biodiversity there, because of the role that it has in flood mitigation, for example. You know, the rice fields, they're so important. Why do we have to support local rice farmers? Because the presence of the wetlands in the form of even rice fields, they actually help mitigate flood. Because when there's too much rain, that's where the rain will go. If everybody wants to convert all these rice fields into development area, into taman and whatnot, and the farmers, because nobody wants to support local rice, wants to pay cheaper rice, eventually you will face problem when you live there. You have this beautiful bungalow there, you will be swimming on the ground floor because it wasn't meant to be a place for you to live, because it's a wetland. It's, you know, so you will actually face problems because you did not actually understand what the landscape was for, right? This is how I think. But we are very lucky in a sense that I think for the past at least 15 years, people have been, there have been so many much movement trying to make people understand that wetlands mean something, that for people to even appreciate their rivers, you know, the rivers that you have, the small ponds, the swamps, and of course, there's a lot of artificial wetlands as well being made, which is not too bad, because it also creates an ecosystem, a landscape that is culturally important, because people can do recreations and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, wetlands, they rock, you know.
To put it mildly, they do rock. And, you know, they were facing increasing threats, as you were saying, you know, degradation due to land conversion, expansion for all these unsustainable practices, you know, that also leads to water pollution from, I think, sedimentation caused by the land clearing, right? But, I mean, like you said, there's been a lot more effort to talk about this importance and why it's so essential for us. And, you know, we're just going to go for a quick break now, but when we come back, we're going to find out, you know, some threats facing Sitio wetlands. I'm speaking today to Dr. Jarina Mohamad Jani. She's from the Faculty of Science and Marine Environment at University of Malaysia, Terengganu. And we're finding out about some threats that were happening over at Sitio Wetlands. We're going to continue that discussion after this quick break. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today, all the way from Terengganu, is Dr. Jarina Mohamad Jani. She's from the Faculty of Science and Marine Environment at University of Malaysia, Terengganu, and we're talking about Sitio Wetlands, which is one of the largest natural wetlands in the east coast of Peninsula Malaysia. It's also the only wetland in Malaysia with 9, but Dr. Jarina says maybe 10 interconnected ecosystems. And we're finding out what's happening over there, because recently a local environmental NGO called EcoSweat Initiative, they raised the alarm about some licensed sand mining activities that were causing damage to the beach area. What was happening there, Dr. Jarina? You know, tell me what the locals had actually witnessed, and what is it that they were raising the alarm about?
Okay, so like I mentioned earlier, that's our playground, right? And when this news came out, basically a group which is called EcoSweat. It is a social entrepreneurship led by a few young people and local, some mostly women that run sustainable ecotourism activities in Sitio Wetlands. So they noticed something was going on at the river mouth, which is one of the 10 ecosystems that we were discussing. And what is more shocking for them is because they saw that this whatever activities that was happening there, it included the felling of trees at the coastal forest that is there. So and actually they were alerted as well by some community members that were living there, and they said, you know, there's something happening, because ironically the people in this area called Mangkok, the village, they were part of a replanting initiative a couple of years back to replant the coastal area because of, you know, threats, destabilization of beaches and whatnot. So they planted casuarina. So it must have been heartbreaking for them. Wow. to see all these trees being felled by bulldozers and whatnot. So they were just, you know, there were no signboards to explain what was happening. And remember, this is like during the MCO, right? So there's very little things that, you know, people were living, staying at home, and this was happening during the, actually they reported this around during the Ramadan, right? So so when we got flagged, we were so shocked because we were just there back in February before the MCO was announced again, because we were documenting the River Mouth as part of a documentation that we're doing for the state park, because we wanted to highlight the 10 ecosystems, as I mentioned earlier. And the River Mouth is one of the critical ecosystems because that's the thing that connects the people who live in actually around the riverbanks to the sea, because they still go and fish in the sea. However, at the same time, it is also the only place that actually is like a gatekeeper, because the South China Sea is so, it's an open sea, and it's so dynamic that it's, that you need this barrier to be strong, because otherwise, like I said, the boardwalk will be the beach, you know. So when the trees were felled, they were so shocked, because they understood that they planted this because they wanted to enhance the stability of the soil, because that's the last bastion against the onslaught of the dynamic strong South China Sea, even during non-monsoon. Yeah, so they raised this, and when we heard about it, we were just shocked. And I remember saying, because they took, you know, nowadays we have technology, right? So they had managed to get hold of a drone, so they flew the drone, they took photos from bird's eye view, and then we can imagine the expense of this project, and they send it to us. And I was just shocked, because we were just flying drone as well back in February, and I was just saying, oh my god, the beautiful scene that we captured for our documentation is gone. So that's when eventually it got picked up by news, and then, you know, that's the strength of social media as well, I guess. But what is good about this engagement by EcoSweat is it was pretty factual. There were some facts that were not so accurate. For example, this was not really directly in the state park. It was not impacting the state park directly, but definitely indirect impact is there. So when that happened, we started, because like I said earlier, that is our UMT's playground. So we have all this information, facts that we have to share to be able to engage with the people who actually approved this, and also to find out what was happening, because there was no signboard, nothing. And I'm happy to at least share, as of today, we got some closure, because we had a meeting today with we were discussing the management of state park at a committee level, and we raised this issue, and we were so we were so happy to hear that for example, the district officer explained to us what was happening, and they were also very, 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 very upset, because actually, what is happening was, supposed to happen was, this company was supposed to dredge inside the lagoon at the River Mouth area, which has gotten so sedimented because of the monsoon and whatnot, that it was causing difficulty for the local fishermen to go out to sea. So the authorities decided, okay, you can clear the pathway, the navigation pathway, so that the fishermen can actually go out. But ironically, and so one of the things that we, after that, we did also mention that that was also a bit of a blind spot, because they did allow this company to have a site for what you call the, you know, stockpiling, 0.97 hectares for stockpiling in that area. So, but what happened was, and they told us they went to the site as well, and they were upset because of that. This company had actually gone beyond the 0.97 hectares. Okay. Mm-hmm. By the time the drone was taken, it was almost about 5 hectares. And by the time the authorities actually, by the time the authorities actually had come this morning, they told us, they roughly estimated about maybe 7 hectares already had been cleared. And even the forestry officer who had actually gone to, I mean, the forestry people who had gone on site, they said more than 100 trees, they feel, had been felled already by then. So and so we were discussing this, and it was, for me, it was great to see how the agencies were coming together with their facts and everything, and you know, telling that it's true. Because for all I know, since I've been working with In Situ Wetlands, especially since the gazettement of the park in 2018, I have seen a very good information sharing between the agencies involved in managing this transparency, openness and whatnot. But maybe because it was the MCO, some things just went off radar. So, but the good thing is, when EcoSuite highlighted this, it was picked up by media. It then it went viral in social media. And because they were factual as well, not in, like I said, no Warren Kopi talk, it was actually quite factual. And we came in after that to assist them to also engage with the authorities to see why we would be worried about this development as well. In the end, it came true. It helped the decision makers to make the right decision. And of course, we hope that the parties that were involved in clearing this area would now take the responsibility to rehabilitate. But it's not going to be easy. For me, when I read the response from the company, I almost laughed because they said, "Never mind, we will replant." This shows how people don't understand a tree, you know, how long it takes, and even to make a tree grow, you know, how much effort it is. And also to remember that what they took off, what they had felled mature trees. And so if you replant, it takes years before the same ecosystem service that was given by that old growth tree can come back. So these are the things that, and but it's good because we were discussing this in the meeting, and this, and the forestry officer came, backed up our claims, and they said, "Never mind. Now what we're going to do is we're going to make sure that this company is accountable for rehabilitation, and it's okay. All of us, let's go and let's rehabilitate now." Because I was highlighting the fact that we cannot wait until monsoon for this to happen. We have to do it now, because by monsoon, when when the waves come, none of the trees will survive. So that's why. But it's good. Whatever it is, for me, it has been. It's good to see that this issue. I mean, it's quite unfortunate that those trees had already gone. But people will take note of this. Anyone else who wants to do something along in the Terengganu coastline now will think twice. They will know that, you know, maybe we can't get away with this because the eyes are on us. You know, people have technology, people have media, people have, avenues to actually highlight their concerns.
I don't know. It's heartbreaking to hear, you know, that these, you know, what happened, you know, these trees were felled. But it's so heartening to hear how the local communities came together and raised the alarm. And you know, like you said, you know, the power of social media, the power of them collaborating with you and, you know, getting all the facts right and presenting such a strong case. And gosh, look at the great outcome that has come from all of this. I mean, if that doesn't show the power of local communities, I don't know what does.
Yeah, especially we have to, for me, what is important is that we always stay together because, the other people who have other interests will always try to pit you against each other. Because that's what when I saw the response as well, I was really, really upset because they were saying we are doing this for the 1,000 fishermen. And we have no issue with that. We want you to clear the pathway, the navigation path for the fishermen. We are happy that you're doing that. But why are you cutting the trees on the ridge? Because if that ridge collapse, if that part of the river mouth collapse, then the South China Sea will come in. That will be saltwater intrusion. That will be changing the lagoon. It will be no lagoon. If there's no ridge, there's no lagoon. And then when the lagoon is gone, all the mud flat, you know, in situ wetland is so unique. Like I said, you can see the interconnectedness between people and nature because, for example, you go there, you will find people, if you go cruising, you will see heads. So you don't go on a boat on your own. You always have to go with the local people because they know where to go and not to go because there'll be heads bobbing in the water because those people are using their feet to actually collect clams, bivalves. There's a lot of bivalves on the mud flat when the tide is high. When the tide is low, you can just sit and with your hand, you can find, a lot of bivalves, clams, as well as a very rare species of cockle, which is the hairy cockle. Usually in the West Coast, or the ones that you find in the markets are black cockles. But in situ wetlands, we have hairy cockles, which is really quite rare in Malaysia to find. There's a very few sites, but we have them in situ wetlands. And if this river mouth breaks open, you know, if it disintegrates, then it means all these mud flats will be gone. What will they be looking? What kind of resource, livelihood can they find? You know, it will be gone for them. And the mangrove forest. There's a lot of islands actually inside the lagoon, which consists mainly of mangroves. And these mangroves, these islands, there's nobody living there. But they're so important. People go there every day because they harvest, for example, one of the most, from my own research, one of the most utilized wild plant in situ wetlands is actually the nipah. the nipah futikan, the nipah palm, right? Because every day they go and harvest the shoot because they make, you know, the organic cigarette paper. And the same thing, it's amazing. It's like almost zero waste because, okay, they take the young shoots, the leaf is taken for the cigarette paper, and then they take, you know, the bone, the mid rib, the lady, you know. People actually, the ladies, mostly ladies, will actually collect those things, not wasted. They make baskets, which we call lekar. Different designs, you know, big, small. So they make lekar instead. And then for the older ones, they can actually make lidis, penyapu lidi, you know. Mm-hmm. And then and for the nipah that is actually more ogro, they make atap. So you know, and if all these islands become this, also become impacted because there's no more lagoon, then what resources do they have? So these are the things, that's why we were, from UMT, we were very concerned because we say that is actually the gate, you know, that is the last bastion for the city wetlands. If river mouth collapse, that's it. 10 will be no more. There'll be just the beach.
Goodness. Well, thank goodness for that. I mean, and thank goodness for, you know, all of you coming together. And I think that also just shows how important it is for local communities to be integrated into conservation, right? And also tourism, you know, development planning. After all, they are the key stewards of the area.
Yep. And that is what is great about for me, for the City Wetlands State Park, because it's so different from other state parks. It recognizes that they were created you know, in the midst of communities, that it's not like others that are remote, you know, it's isolated. Of course, we have inhabitants, for example, even in the pristine forest, we have the orang asal and whatnot, orang asli, but it's different from here, because these are people, you know, basically the boundary of the city wetlands state park is actually somebody's house, right? so you're surrounded by people. So that's why they are your best, they are your partners. They have to be your partners. You don't have a choice. And that's why it's so unique, because they have to be your strongest supporters. So from the beginning, for example, this year, I'm so happy they finally issued licenses to all the resource users. They started with the people who use the aquatic resources, and they're going to move on to the people who use plant resources, because one of the biggest threats to wetlands is actually encroachment from other people, from outsiders. Because, you know, the local people, they have been there for so long. They are, like I said, from my research, I found them to have very sustainable practices, because they know how to take care of their resources, right? Because they know they want to be able to use that continuously. But what has happened is, for example, mud crab. I work closely with the mud crab fishermen. They tell me, you know, the biggest problem for them is that on weekends, there'll be a lot of people coming from outside city wetlands. Some of them come all as far as the Tanah Merah in Kelantan, and they would have paid for petrol to get there. So once they're there, they want to get their investment covered, right? So these are the people who actually will take even the smallest crab, because the problem is with dengue, when dengue is rampant, there's this myth going on around, right? That if you have dengue, the best cure is to eat ketam soup, right?
So ketam, I didn't know that.
Ketam, okay. Yes. So even the cucu, the cicit, also can. So because of that, these people, yes. So my crab, I call them pot skyla, because we have there's four species of skyla mud crabs in the world, and we have three. Out of four, we have three of them in City Wetlands, you see. So I call them the pot skyla situ. So this group of mine, we're trying to actually replenish. We have we've created these seed banks, and they are the ones who telling me, they call me Cikja, you know, this problem, because we don't take, for example, we never go and suluh, they call it. You know, they use a torchlight and they look for the mud crabs, the big ones especially, in their burrows. And the locals wouldn't do that, because they say if you look for them in their burrows, you will destroy the habitat, because that's where they shelter and whatnot, right? So they will never do that. But the people who come from outside, because they want to get their investment, you know, the profit. The returns. So they would do anything. So I have met them. I remember we were walking, because we have also fireflies, synchronized fireflies in City Wetlands, by the way. So we were walking to look at the fireflies, and we found three cars in that small alley. And I was like, so I started talking to them. I said, and he was showing me, happily showing me what he was catching. I said, alamak, you know, cucu ni, let go, lepas lah. That means, you know, it's really small ones. Why don't you just let go? He said, oh no, you know, I'm ambil belaka. He said, you know, I'm going to take them all. So they were right. The local resource users, they say the pressure is from the market. For as long as the market keeps buying, you know, and also for as long as there's still people who actually come in and don't care about sustainability, because they don't care. It's not their backyard, right? If for these people, if the city wetlands gets depleted, this is supposed to go somewhere else. But for the local community, this is their heritage. This is the traditional livelihood, right? It means a lot to them. So they are definitely happy. And from my research so far, they've never once said that we are against sustainable catch. We are not. But what we want is if we were to follow sustainable catch, you have to make sure that there is no external pressure that other people will follow as well. So yeah, I think they are the biggest partners in City Wetlands. And for me, that's why it's also another example. Well, it's not yet, you know, we're still new to see it's a success story, but it is a very good model also to learn from.
Okay. Just talking to you, Dr. Jarina, I think anyone listening is going to want to come and visit Sithiu Wetlands as soon as it's safe to travel once again. I can't believe I've never even been there. So, you know, and it's wonderful to hear that this development, you know, that everybody came together and we've got some sort of resolution from the issues that stemmed. But I'm afraid we're running out of time. But if there's any last message that you'd like to leave us with about, you know, why we should come visit or, you know, why wetlands are so important, any last message at all that you'd like to leave us with?
Okay, I would say two things. First of all, come to City Wetlands if you really want to see how people connect to nature and how nature is part of us. And do not just come for 30 minutes or half an hour, half day. Spend a few days because there's so much. Like I said, there's 10 ecosystems for you to discover. Come and support local economy, stay at the homestays or the Airbnbs and whatnot. So be part of us. And secondly, I want to say that everybody has to learn about what has happened in City Wetlands with the issue of the river mouth. You can see how everybody can play a role. That you, if you see something is not right, get the facts right. Find out factually and then do something. Report. Ask the authorities because sometimes they mean well, but they just did not, you know, it's a blind spot. So everybody can play a role. Everyone is an agent of change and positive change. So be empowered. Do something.
Yeah, and collaborate, right? Like, you know, with this situation, they reached out to you so you could point them in the right direction as well, you know, help them to fact check things. You know, so important, all this collaboration.
Definitely. You can never achieve much only by yourself. You can do something, but you do more when there's more than one person, right? So, yeah. Anyway, you know, I'm a people person. So I always, my husband say, I go crazy if I don't talk to anyone.
Well, we hope to catch up with you more. And definitely, you know, we're going to get in touch more and talk to you about what's happening over in Sithiu. But thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Juliet.
I've been speaking to Dr. Jarina Mohamad Jani. She's from the Faculty of Science and Marine Environment from University of Malaysia, Terengganu. And she's telling us all about Sithiu Wetlands. And again, I think all of us need to make a trip there, you know, once it's safe to do so. And check out those 10 interconnected ecosystems when we can. But if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, just search for the podcast on the BFM app or at bfm.my/earth. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.